I'm a chicken fried. A cold beer on a Friday night. A pair of jeans that fit just right. And the radio.
I mean, you have to get at least to that part, obviously. 810 here. Even I know that. 810 here on News Radio 92.3. Informative, local, dependable. Joining us now, couldn't join us yesterday because it was Memorial Day, but Congressman Jimmy Petronas, District 1 Northwest Florida, is with us. Jimmy, welcome back to the show, sir.
Hey, great to be with you.
Great to have you. Let's talk about the big, beautiful bill that, of course, passed by one vote. How important did you feel when it passed by one vote?
There wasn't a big line of people running up to say thank you for getting elected. Let's put it that way.
Okay.
Here's the challenge. We were up for 24 hours straight, literally awake. You had a few members but took naps. We had one member who overslept and missed the vote altogether. But the Democrats were going to be locked in. They were going to they threatened Hakeem Jeffries. You know, threatened to want to, every time he got interrupted, he was going to extend his speech by 15 minutes. He knew he didn't have the votes. So it was childish, okay? The games are being played.
Yeah.
But this is what we had to do to get the president's agenda, at least across the finish line for the House of Representatives.
Okay, you can't just say somebody overslept and not tell me who overslept. I mean, who overslept?
Oh no, I got to pull it up.
No, it's okay. All right.
I haven't met him. It was a Republican from New York. I think we had two that missed the votes. And it was kind of funny. He said, oh, well, by the time I got to the chamber, the voting already closed out. Then the speaker does a press conference after their gaggle.
Yeah.
The speaker just threw the member under the bus. Saying, overslept.
Oh, man. Well, I think, you know, we have all had things we overslept on at times. I have kind of a big picture question. There's a lot of very interesting things in this bill. We'll see if we can get to a couple of them. But I have a big picture question. So for the last 4 months, we've heard nothing but Doge and cuts. People getting fired, budget slashed, you know, chainsaw to the forest kind of thing. And then in this bill, we're raising the debt ceiling by a couple of $1 trillion. And I know historically President Trump has always been willing to raise the debt ceiling. It's one of the things that drives me crazy about his fiscal policy. But on the one hand, we're cutting. If we're cutting, why do we have to raise the debt ceiling? Shouldn't we be seeing some savings? I mean, I thought the point was to chip into this debt and to really kind of pay. I mean, I kind of know the answer, but I wanted to hear your perspective on, you know, why we're in where we're at.
Yeah, it was put together as really like about a 10-year plan. So we instituted $1.5 trillion in savings, okay? But at the same time, the president wanted no tax on tips, no tax on overtime, expanded the child tax credit. There was some benefits to seniors regarding Social Security benefits. So all those cost money. So the House was adamant. We've got to cut spending. Okay. Do I want to cut more? Absolutely. But we got $1.5 trillion on the table. The president had his tax cuts that he wanted to extend that passed back in 2017, and he had the new tax cuts.
Yeah.
So we had to bring this as a balanced package. So that's why it's a 10-year benefit for the savings, benefit for the taxes. But we had to increase the credit limit, the debt ceiling, in order to give him breathing room to bring his new benefits online. And you hope that, you know, you think about the typical service industry employee, you know, maybe they make somewhere in the tune of $40,000 to $45,000 a year. Well, now you've taken taxes off of those tip wages, and now it's going to be a shot in the arm. Well, those dollars will be spent. They'll dump into the economy. I would think most restaurants are going to have people standing in line to wait tables just because of how lucrative a benefit that'll become. It'll change the dynamics of going out to eat a lot. I wouldn't be even surprised if you don't see restaurants having a different approach to the customer because of it. It'll be interesting how the culture will change.
Yeah, I mean, I like the provision. It's interesting. I thought it was a little weird that the cap was $25,000. That seemed like a pretty low cap for, you know, restaurant employee. I mean, a good bartender, a good waiter is going to certainly exceed that cap on reported wages, and kind of a weird mixed bag that you have. It's up to $160,000 total income. And I'm like, who's making $160,000 and is only paying $25,000? You know, just anyway, the numbers didn't quite add up to me. But it's a benefit, as you say, and people are going to be spending the economy. The other thing, in smaller notes, just from the plan, the MAGA accounts, well, they're Trump accounts now, $1,000 for newborn babies. Is that right?
Right. Yeah. And so, I mean, I've got, look, my wife and I, we, it seemed like just yesterday we were raising our boys when they were newborns, and the amount of resources it takes, to raise a child, the diapers, the diversion you're taking from a lot of, you're just not able to work as much.
Yeah.
So, I mean, I get it. Where the president's going with this, he wants to help out young families. You know, it's a very compassionate, you know, a provision that he wanted in the legislation. So, I mean, this is for families. But I can see where some people are scratching their head a little bit, but end of the day, this was a priority of the president, and we aligned on that interest.
And boy, I will tell you, given the cost of a child, a healthy child with no complications is, I mean, just minimum, just to walk in the door, you're $5,000. You know, and so
yeah,
you know,
and not everybody has siblings with kids that you can borrow clothes from after
yep.
they outgrow them.
Yep.
I mean, ours, it seemed like we were buying shoes every other month because of how quick the kids were growing. You're buying outfits. And so the hand-me-downs, at least in my family, were appreciated because I was the baby of four boys.
Right.
So we were constantly getting clothes from my brother.
Yeah, no, there's a lot of elements like that. And, you know, so in theory, just like the child tax credit, in theory, you know, I'm a supporter. Back to Jimmy Patronis, our congressman from District 1. You've been able to be the Speaker Pro Tem once, twice, how many times since you've been in office?
Yeah, I've done it twice.
Okay. Is it fun or is it like, why do I have to do this?
Oh, no. It's a lot of fun. I mean, one, it's one of the most hallowed chambers in the United States. And so to be able to sit there and moderate the debate between members on legislation, it was funny. Brian Mast was actually the manager on the Republican legislation at that time. So it's kind of, so the manager is typically the chairman of the committee. So it was a bill that came out of Foreign Affairs. Brian Mast chairs Foreign Affairs, and then he will line up speakers to speak on behalf of the bill. The ranking member of the Foreign Affairs Committee, the Democrat, will then line up speakers to speak against the legislation. Mm-hmm. And so then I'm playing traffic cop between the two of them to make sure that, you know, equal time is being heard in the chamber for the record, speaking for and against the legislation. So yeah, it's kind of like driving a Mack truck. You got to pay attention.
Makes sense. The penny elimination is kind of a fun one. We haven't talked a lot about this on the show, but a little bit. We're phasing out. We've ordered our last blanks for the pennies, and then it's going to be what? You know, every man for himself, but use your nickels. The one, like the math on this has always struck me as weird. I get that pennies are expensive to make, but they are cheaper to make by a lot than nickels, which doesn't this just drive up the cost of nickels or the, you know, the more cost because we're using nickels more? And also, doesn't Congress need to enact legislation to require rounding or something because online prices into the pennies, regular prices into the, like, how does this all work?
Yeah. So, and you know, and we haven't had a copper penny in over a decade. So our pennies right now, they're copper plated zinc.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's kind of funny. Yeah. And you're exactly right. Now there's going to be a hell of a lot more stress placed on nickels of this rounding. I can't imagine how the point of sale and the retailers are freaking out as the gravity of this starts to sink in. But yeah, we're going to have to enact some legislation from Congress in order to ultimately push this through, or you'll see what pennies are in circulation will stay in circulation, and then businesses will start to evolve. But Yeah, is the savings great? It's a few million dollars. It's not massive, but again, I think there's the old adage: if you take care of the pennies, the dollars will take care of themselves.
Yeah.
If you watch your pennies, the dollars will take care of themselves. It's a little bit of the similar analogy. We can't manage our spending enough in Washington, and where we can save money, we should save money, in my opinion.
You know, one of the things, and this is, again, an issue where I thought this was a congressional thing. Of course, you know, the president is doing almost anything he wants to do, and then it's a question of will court step in, will Congress step in, and so forth. But this issue of Harvard has become a big issue in the last few days, banning the foreign students, threatening, he has not done, but threatening to shift $3 billion in grants from the research side of Harvard over into trade schools, which is money appropriated, as I understand, by Congress for research, so it would take a congressional reallocation. But, you know, you're in the business side of things. You're not an education committee or anything like that, but what role do you see Congress having in specifically this Harvard situation with the reallocation of these grants? Or do you?
I like the idea of digging into not just Harvard's grants, but all grants. We've got a system in Washington, and we also have it at a state level. The state of Florida is not hurting for money the way Washington is, but we create this solution that, you know, we want to spawn research, or you name it, or we want to provide, you know, infrastructure. So we'll create some criteria and let cities, counties, schools, what have you, can apply for the money, and then we write them a check. Well, what doesn't happen is the type of follow-up that should take place. Are those dollars being spent on what the grant was initially programmed to do? And we flow so much money out of government coffers through these grant solutions. To me, there's a lot of fraud, waste, and abuse. So, yeah, and grants should not be something as a guaranteed recurring income. I mean, a grant should be a program that's out there, let somebody apply for it. Hopefully that has some good that's from it. And then Congress should be forced to reauthorize that whole process all over again based on the productivity of those dollars. Well, it gets into autopilot.
Yeah.
And, you know, I mean, I'm sorry. We should not allow such enormous sums of money just to go into autopilot without any accountability of what those dollars are really truly doing, because they are taxpayers' money.
Yeah, I mean, $3 billion. I'm not saying that there's not, you know, good research being done at Harvard, but, you know, eventually you add up billions and eventually it's real money. I mean, that's a lot of money we're talking about. And,
it is. And
I'm with you that there needs to be accountability. I've always been a fan of the zero-based budgeting kind of concept that every year you have to come back and justify everything you're doing. And frankly, budgets, grants, legislation, all of these things ought to have goals, benchmarks, you hit or you don't hit, and sunset provisions. You know, this is a 5-year, this is a 2-year, and maybe some of them, maybe many of them do, but the expectation that just every year we're going to get billions of dollars, and as you say, not just Harvard, but across the board, you know, where's the money going? DOGE for education. I mean, I'm in. You know, that's a good thing, right?
Well, and sometimes the only way to what the president's trying to do, the only way you can get somebody's attention to force them to come forward with their homework to show if they've actually done their assignment is cut the money off.
Yeah.
Okay, so managing the enormous amount of money that flows out of our country's coffers every day into entities that seem to be reliable in sense, there's no way you can manage it efficiently. And so, you know, I appreciate the governor. And you know what he's doing? He's starting with the biggest, most highest profile consumer of grant dollars in the whole United States. And let me get your attention, because the trickle down effect that I'll have, if he punches Harvard in the mouth, then everybody else is going to say, you know what, we better tighten up.
Yeah, no, I agree. It's an interesting approach. I don't know that I totally agree with what he's doing in some of the particulars, but the idea of bringing accountability to higher education, especially on the funding side, I mean, I couldn't be more on board with that. Jimmy Patronis,
sure.
He is our congressman for Northwest Florida District 1. As always, sir, thank you for the time. Thanks for what you're doing, and we'll talk to you again next week, Monday at 7:35 like normal.
Yeah.
But thank you for the time. I appreciate it.
Have a fantastic week. Thank you for having me.